This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Over the last 25 years, our quest for thinness has morphed into a relentless cultural obsession with weight and body image. But at what price? Harriet Brown, the author of Brave Girl Eating, A Family's Struggle with Anorexia, and the winner of a Books for a Better Life Award in 2011, is here with us today. She's edited two anthologies, written extensively for the New York Times Magazine, Tuesday Science Section, O Magazine, Psychology Today, and Prevention. Ms. Brown is an associate professor of magazine journalism at the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. And as I mentioned, she's here with us today to talk about this very important issue. Welcome, Professor Brown. Thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So you've devoted the last decade or more to exploring these issues. Why?
Well, I didn't start out to do that, but I think the answer is complicated. It starts with my own history of weight and struggling with weight. You know, I grew up in the 70s, 60s and 70s, and, you know, like most girls my age, I dieted. In fact, I went on my first diet with my mother. We went to Weight Watchers together. She went on to become a Weight Watchers lecturer, and I did not. But that started me on that cycle that so many of us go through, where you lose weight, you feel great, people compliment you, and then slowly the weight comes back on, as it does for more than 90% of us.
So, not to interrupt you, but what was the cultural mandate at that time? In other words, you said in the 60s and 70s, what was the message being delivered that motivated you and your mother, for that matter, to go to Weight Watchers?
Well, if you think about it, who was one of the top models of the time was Twiggy. And then,
so it's the Twiggy phenomenon.
Yes, and then who was one of the top celebrities of the time was Cher. So we got the double whammy there. Not only was she thin, she had long, straight hair, which I did not have.
Right.
So, and, you know, I remember at age 15 losing 20 pounds, which isn't a huge amount of weight.
It's a lot of weight.
And my life changed utterly. Suddenly boys were interested. Suddenly I felt confident. So there was this aha, oh, wow, this is great, you know. And then, you know, of course, the weight came back on. And I went through that cycle probably four times, and including losing about 40 pounds to fit into my mother's wedding dress.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, it was actually that time I got much thinner, although I was still within the sort of normal range. I never got too thin. But I didn't feel well at that weight. I got dizzy, I got dehydrated, I didn't have stamina. I was constantly obsessed with food and eating and what I was going to eat next. I mean, I really think I was ill at that weight. And again, it was right in the range that I'm supposed to be in for my height. So, you know, then as life went on, I had a couple of pregnancies and a big postpartum depression. I wound up on antidepressants, and guess what? I gained weight, both from the pregnancies, I think, and antidepressants. And I gained a lot of weight. I gained about 50 pounds in a year or two, which is a lot. And that left me in this moment of despair, like, oh my God, my life is over. I totally don't fit the cultural norm. I'm ugly, I'm middle-aged, you know, all the things that we say to each other,
and
to ourselves.
And you're fat.
I am fat.
To use the word.
That's right.
We never can use.
And I like that word. In fact, well, I don't like it, but I use that word. I think it's the right word. I teach a class in body diversity at Syracuse, and the first thing I do is try to get my students comfortable with using the word fat. You can see how hard it is for them. Like, sometimes they just literally can't get the word out of their mouths.
It's also what our definition of fat is.
Right.
Is part of the, I think, dilemma.
That's right. And, you know, because it's used as such an insult. It's like, you're fat. It's like the worst thing you can say to a woman in this culture. So I just remind them that fat is a descriptor. I have fat on my body. Actually, we all have fat on our bodies or we would be dead. So it's okay.
But I think the point is, what constitutes that adjective, that descriptor, is different. I mean, somebody could be 5 pounds overweight and call themselves or have someone call them fat,
mm-hmm.
which is ridiculous.
Right.
And then you have people who are truly morbidly obese, which is a whole different, you know, kettle
right,
of
although
fish.
I don't like that term morbidly mm-hmm, obese,
mm-hmm.
but
it's
we can certainly say they're severely obese, whatever
mm-hmm.
we say. Yeah, that's right. And it's what we say to ourselves. I mean, at my lowest weight, I did not feel thin. And I've heard a lot of women especially say that, you know, I still thought of myself as fat. I still believed I looked fat. In fact, I think I was more critical of my body at a lower weight.
And you also in your own family had further experience with issues and why you wrote Brave Girl Eating. Help us, just remind us about that.
Yeah, so when my older daughter was about 14 and I was still very much struggling with these issues in my own life, she developed anorexia. And it was an awakening for me. It was my eyes really opened to how important weight and appearance is in our culture. Not so much because of her developing the disease. I mean, anorexia and other eating disorders are biological illnesses, and you know, and they're terrible, as you know, terrible things to go through. And she was in a lot of pain, and that was very hard to watch. But I also was watching how other people responded to her. The day she was diagnosed with anorexia in the pediatrician's office, we went down for her to get an EKG. She took off her shirt. I was crying in the corner because I hadn't seen her without her shirt in some months, and she was, you know, gaunt and terribly ill. And the tech doing the test said to her, "You're so nice and slim. How do you keep your figure?"
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And that was the beginning of what I observed, you know. So while my daughter looked so sick, people would literally walk up to her on the street and praise her body. First of all, that's so inappropriate anyway. But second of all, really, she looked like a concentration camp victim. And as she recovered and gained weight and began to look healthy again, all of that died. And so that was one thing that really opened my eyes to it. And it also made me very aware of how much time we spend talking about these things. So it's a pro forma kind of thing. You see someone, a friend, maybe you haven't seen them in a month or two. Oh, you look great. Have you lost some weight?
Yeah, classic.
Families do that.
Classic.
Right. Classic. And then there's the whole fat talk thing that we do to ourselves, right? Oh, we say to our friends and ourselves, my thighs are huge.
Do I look fat in this?
And do I look fat in this? That's right.
Yeah, and you better not say yes.
Exactly. And only people who really truly aren't fat can participate in fat talk, which is a really interesting part of that phenomenon.
So why did you write this book? I mean, this book is called Body of Truth. Well, before we go on, I'm just going to say to our audience, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, along with author Harriet Brown. We're talking about our cultural obsession with weight, how we got there, what we need to do about it. So why write Body of Truth?
Well, I didn't really want to write this book, actually. And it came about while I was touring for Brave Girl Eating. I would talk to audiences, and I was talking about eating disorders, but inevitably, that also included a conversation about weight and how we perceive ourselves and others. And because I had dived into the research to write about eating disorders, I was just continuing to look at the research around obesity and weight. It just sort of interested me. And I started learning some things that were really surprising. And I started.
Like what?
Well, like, for example, that more than 90% of people who lose weight dieting will gain it all back within 5 years. Like the fact that a lot of the research around weight that sort of says, oh, dieting and medications can make you thinner, well, they don't follow people for long enough. They follow people for 18 months, 2 years. There's virtually one study that followed people for more than 5 years. And so they show success, but ordinary people experience failure. So as I started talking about these things integrally as part of my conversations about eating disorders, people started saying to me, oh my God, I never knew that. You need to write about that. And I didn't want to, because every time I have written about weight issues for the New York Times or whatever, the pushback is tremendous.
Really? Like what?
And vicious. Well, for example, I recently published a piece on Slate.com about obesity treatment. And again, it's very reporting heavy. It's looking at the history of obesity treatment and effectiveness and some of the things we've just been talking about. And if you go online, you know, like the first comment I saw was, fat people are lazy, ugly, dirty, and they smell bad. Mm-hmm. And that was not an unusual comment. And so there's a lot of fat hate, and there's a lot of resentment of anyone who even challenges any of these issues at all.
So what in our history, I mean, you mentioned Twiggy and you mentioned Cher, and clearly I grew up in that same era. I'm a little older than you, but I have all of those experiences as well.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, it wasn't the case. I mean, if you look at Rubens' paintings, mm-hmm. or you look historically way back, people who were nobility, people who were wealthy, had more flesh on them, whereas the so-called gaunt look was more for the people who were struggling, impoverished, sometimes uneducated.
And malnourished, that's right. So, you know, the funny thing about human beings is we always value what is scarce. So you're absolutely right. And when it started to change was right around the Industrial Revolution. So a couple things happened then. Food became more abundant in the U.S. and in the West in general. And people stopped having, a lot of people were doing more sedentary work. So it became easier to be fleshy. And so naturally then the desired condition became to be thin, the thing that was harder to achieve. And what I find fascinating when I've looked at the history of this is that every time in our history that women gained some social or economic power, like 1920, the vote, 1960s, birth control, and women's
movement. Mm-hmm.
That is when the cultural ideals for what women's bodies should look like become more and more punishing, thinner,
so
more androgynous. It's fascinating to me. And, you know, now it's not enough now in our culture to be a successful, smart woman. You've got to look a certain way, too, whereas men are not held to that kind of level of standard around appearance, although they certainly have some norms too.
Yeah, and I would say that, like, I was going to ask, like, who is affected by this? Clearly women, but is it only women? It strikes me that even though the standard may be different for men, men do suffer from some of this.
They do, and especially gay men, who have higher percentages of eating disorders and certainly are more vulnerable culturally to some of these pressures, but I think the difference is for women, you know, the goal is thinness. You can, you know, as the Duchess of whatever, the Duchess of Wales said, you know, you can never be too rich and too thin.
Oh, no, right.
Right, before Fergie.
So who, I mean, I don't want to run out of time. What should, can parents, educators, you know, role models, caregivers do to help counter these destructive forces? What should we be doing?
So I think one thing we can do is stop fat talking about ourselves. I was determined to raise my kids without some of the stuff that I had heard from my mother. I never commented on their bodies, which is a very good thing, but I was constantly dissing my own body. That's number one. Number two is, I think there's this meme now that fat is unhealthy, thin is healthy. The research does not bear that out at all. So I think we just have to be more thoughtful about that. It would be great to be a little bit more understanding of the truth, which is that having a little fat on your body is actually good for you, especially as you get older. It can be protective, and people who are a little fatter live longer, and there's all sorts of things that most of us are unaware of. And I think, you know, taking the emphasis off appearance, especially for girls, as much as possible, is crucial. Instead of saying, oh, you look so pretty today, find some other way to compliment your daughter or your student or whatever.
I think that's a very key point. Unfortunately, it seems like it's an uphill battle swimming against the current.
Totally.
For the last 25, 30 years, I've heard these kinds of statements, and but I applaud you for your efforts, for your work. It's crucial that there be that voice and that powerful voice, at least giving us some food for thought. So thank you so very much. In the very little bit of time we have left, what's your next project, quickly?
Probably it's going to be a piece about estranged families.
Very interesting. We'll be looking for it. Thank you so very much for coming and spending time with us. My guest has been Harriet Brown. She's a scientific journalist and associate professor of magazine journalism at the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University and the author of award-winning Brave Girl Eating and her latest book, Body of Truth. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.